begin a new series today. We're just going to consider selected psalms. The psalms are loved by many. I trust that probably many in this room love the psalms. One reason the psalms are so loved is they truly do reflect just the full range of human experience. The things that humans think, things that humans feel, the things that happen to them during the course of their life. The Psalms just kind of talk of all those experiences that humans who are after God, humans who belong to the people of God, that they have. So we love the Psalms in part because they say a lot about us. They say a lot about me. A lot of times it's individual, and it's just an individual psalmist capturing something about his own experience and the happenings of his own life and the thoughts and feelings of his own soul. So the Psalms say a lot about me. They say a lot about us. Often, I think, if you're like me, you find that it's the Psalms that put into words what our lives are like. And in this series, we definitely want to consider how the Psalms capture and how they reflect, how they represent human experience, especially those humans who belong to the people of God. We'll explore this as we go, but I hope you will find it interesting that there are indeed times when the psalmist is having a great day, when the psalmist is just very glad, when he's joyful, when the psalmist is confident, when he's secure, when he's quiet, when he's content, when he's rejoicing. So there are times when the psalmist is having a great day, but it's kind of interesting. Such times actually kind of seem to be the exception. Much more common is the psalmist having a bad day. His soul is downcast. He's scared. He's overwhelmed. He's troubled. He's needy. He's lonely. More often, the psalmist's soul more often draws near to the pit than it does to cloud nine. In fact, I'm not sure even cloud nine occurs in the psalms, but, you know, his soul is always getting close to the pit. There are several different types of psalms, but the most common one is what's called the individual lament, the individual complaint. That's by far the most common. The second most common, I think, is the communal complaint. So it's all of us complaining together. So the psalms often tell of kind of the trouble and sorrow that the human soul encounters. And again, often it's putting into words, whether it's the very good day and the joy of our heart and the gladness of it and the thankfulness of it, or how it feels to be overwhelmed and in sorrow and in need and lonely and scared. It captures those things. So we love the Psalms because we find ourselves there. You can read a psalm and say, you know, that happened to me. I know how that feels. But there's another reason that the Psalms are loved. The Psalms are loved for what they say about God. In the Hebrew Bible, the title of the book is actually just praises. So of first importance is just how the Psalms speak of God, how the Psalms speak to God. They sing His praises. In a main focus, certainly, of the series will just to be to take note of what do the Psalms say concerning God? What do they say about Him? What do they say to Him? I want to show you a very interesting passage at the end of the book of Job. Whenever we allude to the book of Job, in fact, if I pause right now and what do you think of, you know, do that association with the book of Job, I mean, we think of Job's story. We tend to think of that human story of what happened to Job. Job is this righteous guy, but he experiences then a great deal of suffering and of evil. So we often go to the book of Job to think about the problem of evil, the issue of human suffering. That's, you know, when you think of the book of Job, that's what we think it's about. It's Job's story, this righteous guy who has all this suffering and all this trouble. At the very end of the book, God weighs in with his thoughts, in his perspective. Most of you know that, you know, a good deal of the book is just debate between Job and three friends. At the end of the book, when God weighs in, the three friends end up getting rebuked. And Job ends up getting commended. But the reason for either the rebuke or the commendation, the rebuke of the three friends and the commendation of Job, has nothing to do with who has done a good job or who has done a poor job of coming to understand evil or coming to understand human suffering. It's not like they get rebuked because, you know, you guys don't understand human suffering very well. Or Job gets commended because, Job, you've really got it dialed in about the human situation and how it works. The rebuke and the condemnation, the commendation, doesn't come because there's a proper understanding about the human condition or an improper understanding of the human condition. Rather, it says this. It came about after the Lord had spoken these words to Job that the Lord said to Eliphaz, the Temanite, that's one of the three friends, kind of the lead guy, the group of three friends, "My wrath is kindled against you and against your two friends, because you have not spoken of me what is right, as my servant Job has. Now therefore take for yourselves 7 bulls and 7 rams, and go to my servant Job and offer up a burnt offering for yourselves, and my servant Job will pray for you, for I will accept him, so that I may not do with you according to your folly, because you have not spoken of me what is right, as my servant Job has." The reason God rebukes the three friends is because they have not spoken of God what is right. And the reason God commends Job is because Job has spoken of God what is right. I very much hope some of our study of Psalms, that our Psalms will help us learn, will teach us what are the right things to say about God. You know, all of us say lots of things about lots of topics. We say things about issues. We say things about happenings. You know, maybe review for a second in your own mind stuff that you said this week. You know, stuff you talked about. You know, you probably talked about the royal wedding, right? You probably said some things about that. Probably maybe you said some things about tornadoes. Probably said some things about other people. You know, maybe you commented on Obama's birth certificate. In the Vince Bronson household, and Stephen's making decisions about college, so I found myself weighing in with some of my thoughts about higher education in the United States. So think about just, you know, stuff that you said. But of all the things that we have perspectives on, that we say things about, the most important, by far, what it is that you say about God. And so ask yourself this question. Do you say what is right about God? In that sense, the book of Job can be very daunting, because you go back and read about what Eliphaz and his two friends said about God. They're pretty astute theologians, actually. And at the end of the story, they get rebuked. You guys are off in your theology. What you say about God is not accurate. So think about that for yourself. What is it that you say about God? Do you say about Him what is right? I think the Psalms can very much teach us what kinds of things are right to say about God. So two big themes in the Psalms. There's a lot of stuff about us. We can find ourselves in the Psalms. We find our experience represented there. But then there's also lots of stuff about God. Lots of things said about God, about who He is and what He does. But then this. A very, I think, wonderful thing that the Psalms do is they bring those two themes together. But the Psalms bring together all that stuff about me, all that stuff about us, all that stuff about our lives and our happenings and our experiences, it brings that together with all the stuff about God. Many times, within the same psalm, you get both a lot of stuff about the psalmist, his experience, his thought, his emotions, his issues, and you get lots of stuff about God, who God is, and what God is doing, and what God says, and what works God does. One of the main goals of our time in the Psalms will be to help us bring together our lives, our experience, the things that go on and happen for us, to bring that together with stuff that's right to say about God. To bring those together in the, you know, the same 20 verses. One of the reasons that's a goal in my own heart is I think it's important and good to learn how can that stuff that's said about God be determinative for us in our lives, our experience, rather than let the stuff about us be determinative for what we say about God. I think it's good that what we say about God should not be derived from what is said about us, what happens in our experience and what happens in our heads. Should be the other way around, that what's said about us is derived from what's said about our God, who he is and what he does. I think the Psalms is a great book to help us not be idolaters. Idolatry is when we make a God in our own image, after our likeness. Worship is when God makes us in his image. But idolatry is when we fashion God according to our image and according to our desires. The classic form of idolatry, as you know, is you take a block of wood and you carve it into something and you overlay it with gold. And you call it a god. You give it a mouth, but of course, because it's made of wood, it can't talk. So it ends up saying only words that you give it to say. You carve some eyes and ears in the thing, but it, of course, can neither see nor hear. So it tends to see and it tends to hear only what you feel it should see and only what you feel it should hear. You give it feet, but it goes nowhere on its own. Rather, it goes only where you allow it to go and designate it to go. So soon, your God feels good about whatever you feel good about. And your God feels bad about whatever you feel bad about. Soon your God has his thoughts be very much like your thoughts. And his ways are very much like your ways. Let me give you an example. Suppose you come up to me and you ask me, Roger, how are you doing? And in response to that, I say, God is so good. I mean, he is really good. What are you now expecting to hear about my situation and my experience?
That's good.
You got in the boat.
Yeah. I mean, the answer to that, like, is something really nice happened to me, right? I mean, my life is good. On the other hand, what if you had asked me, how am I doing? And if I had answered, oh, I don't know. I'm not even sure I believe in God anymore. Then what would you be expecting to hear from me?
Bad.
Just, yeah, something bad happened, right? You would probably go, oh, tell me what happened, right? Of course, and this is important, just like a caveat, this is important, that can be exactly right. It can be that I'm doing great because God has shown his goodness to me. Or it could be that I'm struggling to believe because God's been hard on me or turned his face away from me. That can be so. But such kind of talk can also very much represent a swing to idolatry. When God is only good when I am good. And God is good because I'm doing good. Because I got the new boat, God is good. And God is not so good when I'm not so good. I'm not even sure I believe in him if I'm not doing so good. so that what I say about God is always relative to me and to my experience. Now, the Psalms are a great counter to always making God relative to us and relative to our experience. Now, I think the Psalms will work to teach us to understand ourselves relative to God. Let me give you an illustration. Psalm 109, which is one of the Psalms of David, verse 21, David writes, "Your loving kindness is good." So here's David saying the equivalent to, "God is so good," right? Which, if I said that in response to, "How are you doing?" you would be expecting the next thing to report something really nice and wonderful that happened to me and how good my life is going. Here are the very next two verses. "I am afflicted and needy. My heart is wounded within me. I am passing like a shadow when it lengthens. I am shaken off like the locust." God is so good. Your loving kindness is good. It actually keeps going like this for a while. David affirms that the Lord is good. His loving kindness is good. But it doesn't relate to something wonderful about David. Rather, for David himself, he's afflicted and he's needy and he's wounded and he's shaken and he's faltering. But David's situation doesn't prevent him from saying God is good. Indeed, if you go read the Psalm in its fullness, he wants the goodness of God to determine his situation. That's a very good way to be, to let the things that are right to say about God, how do those things become relativize our situation and our happenings and our experience. Frequently, in the Psalms, you get things that go something like this. That in the Psalm, it says God is good. But also in the same Psalm, it says the psalmist is not so good. Psalm 102 is 28 verses long. In my Bible, it's about a page and a quarter. So it's not very long. 28 verses. Within those 28 verses, the psalmist says quite a few things about God. Here's some of them. These are all direct quotes. So in Psalm 102, it says about God, "Thou, O Lord, dost abide forever." It says, "Thou wilt arrive and have compassion on Zion." It says, "The nations will fear the name of the Lord, and all the kings of the earth thy glory." So the Lord has built up Zion. He has appeared in his glory. The Lord has regarded the prayer of the destitute. So thou hast found the earth, reference to creation. "The heavens are the work of thy hands." Says thy years will not come to an end. So there's quite a few things said there about God within those 28 verses. I mean, it's good stuff, right? Good things to say about God, things that are probably right to say about God. But the psalmist also says some things about himself in those 28 verses of Psalm 102. Here are some of the things he says about himself. "My days have been consumed in smoke. My bones have been scorched like a hearth. My heart has been smitten like grass and has withered away. I forget to eat my bread. My bones cling to my flesh. I resemble a pelican of the wilderness. I'm like an owl of waste places. I'm like a lone bird on a housetop." He likes the bird things, right? He says, "My enemies have reproached me all day long, as I have eaten ashes like bread and mingled my drink with weeping." He says, "My days are like a lengthened shadow, and I wither away like grass." Put those things together, they don't really add up to come. He's doing great, right? That's probably a safe summary. I think it's a marvelous thing that the psalmist can say all this stuff about God when he's doing like this. And he puts it all within 28 verses. And of course, his hope is that the goodness of God, the stuff that's true about God, will determine the outcome of his story, which currently is going like this. That's his hope. That's his prayer. So he doesn't let his current story determine what he says about God. If he did, that's called idolatry, where he makes God in his own image. He can be honest about how his story is going and what's happening to him and what's going on there. We'll talk more about that, but the honesty of the psalmists about their own situation is very refreshing, I think. Even though the report is not always very glorious or glamorous, but it's very honest, and it's kind of refreshingly honest. But whatever's going on in the psalmist's life and happenings, it doesn't determine what it is that's said about God. So I want to encourage all of us, just in the weeks ahead, I encourage you to peruse the Psalms some. Find yourself in them as it represents human experience and human response to God and human happenings and human emotions. So find yourself there. So read through them and tell you, there's me right there. I felt like that. But also find your God there. Find the things that's said about God, the things that are right to say about God. And then find out how they go together. If you were doing that with Psalm 102, you say, okay, here's some things it says about God. If it's in the Bible, I'm assuming it's right to say about God. Oh, and here I found me. Pretty much describes my week. So I found me there. Then you go to the very final verses of Psalm 102, which aren't here, and say, how does he put those things together? You know, when this about God runs up against this about me, what happens? And so find out how those things go together. How can they all be together in 28 verses? That kind of thing happens a lot in the Psalms. And I encourage all of us, just in our time together, find ourselves there, learn what's right to say about God, and how do those things, when they come together, you know, get connected. So there's just an intro to our study. I hope it catches your interest a little bit. And kind of my main thought here is we probably don't think of ourselves as very susceptible to idolatry. Having said that, if you were to characterize North American Christianity, I mean, on a widespread scale, we've remade God into pretty much a North American middle-class evangelical Christian. And he looks a lot like us. He talks a lot like us. He thinks he agrees with us about politics and about health and about, you know, how much money you should make. I mean, he pretty much seems to like the things that we like and is opposed to the things that we are opposed to. So kind of on a widespread scale, we are guilty of remaking God into our image. It's good to learn to be able to say, you ask me how I'm doing. All my days are consumed in smoke. I'm kind of like the pelican in the wilderness. You know, I'm withering away like the grass, eating my food with weeping all day long. Say, well, how's your God? Oh, my God is very great. Rules from heaven, hears the prayer of the destitute. Kingdom's coming. He founded the earth and created the heavens. It's good for all that has breath to give a praise. Those don't seem to go together. And he said, well, I'm hoping that all those things about my God kind of in the end determine my story. To learn to be able to write literature like that itself. I hope perhaps the end, but the quiz will be, you have to write your own song, okay? That'll be the final test or something. So I hope that piques your interest. I hope it sends you to the Psalms. Just find yourself, find your God, put them together. So we want to close the service just by sharing communion together. And maybe just connecting us partaking of communion simply to the introduction here to Psalms. I just want you to notice that when we take communion together, that communion isn't a set of instructions that we give to God. You know, you're not going to all come to the front here and leave a set of instructions there for what God should do in the coming week to make sure it goes well for you. That's not what we're going to do. But rather, that communion is about Him getting to us. That what we receive from Him, that it's our prayer, that determine our story. Partaking of Him, we receive from Him. And we're hoping that what we receive from Him, from our God, is determinative for our story, our lives, our walk, our experience, our thoughts, our emotions. So I just want you to notice that simple thing, that as you come forward, you don't bring something to God, you receive something from Him. You take in something. So it's Him being decisive for us, not us being decisive for Him. So just as you come to receive that which God Himself has provided us.